This episode of Earl Grey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek FM at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org.
Hi, I'm Margot Rose. I was Elene in The Inner Light on Next Generation, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Earl Grey Hot.
Welcome, listeners, to another cup of Earl Grey. I'm your host, Amy Nelson, and joined with me today, as he always is, the wonderful Joe Keegan. Joe, how are you today?
Joe is good today. Hi, Amy. I'm okay. It just feels a bit weird today. It's like a really beautiful day. It is 20 degrees Celsius outside and in Fahrenheit. What do you do? You multiply it by 9, then divide it by 5, then add 32. So 20 multiplied by 9 is 180. Then divide that by 5 is 36.
Wow.
And then add 32 is 68 degrees.
Wow, look at
Fahrenheit.
You.
And my mental arithmetic.
68, that's beautiful.
There's a nice breeze blowing off the, let's call it a sea for want of a better term. But yeah, it's good. It's lovely. I was down the beach earlier. It's lovely. How are you, Amy?
Yeah, we are getting up there in the temperatures. It's getting quite warm. I have been going out running and I need to not go at 2 p.m. It's too hot.
No. I have run in Vegas before. I did the strip run, which is nothing to do with being naked, where you run along the strip, but you have to do it at like 7 a.m.
Yeah.
And even then, it's like, what? It's like
98 degrees.
Yeah. It's decidedly unpleasant. So,
yeah.
But you lose lots of body weight. It's like, well, not actually like matter that makes up your body, it's just water that you lose.
Yeah. I'm impressed that you've done that. I have never woken up that early at STLV to go on the strip run.
It's because you make a plan for when you arrive and then you say, I'm going to do this, and people are waiting on you. So you really have to drag yourself up out of bed and just go regardless of how you're feeling.
Yeah. Well, so, kudos to you.
Thank you.
Well, we have some Babel Conference feedback, and this is from Earl Grey 323 with our fabulous crossover with To the Journey, where we discuss the Borg episode. So, Joe, why don't you start us off?
Okay. Our friend Greg Malumbi says, Liam not liking Q, who threw me for a bit of a shock. I think he's the first person I've heard say he didn't like that episode. That's fine, but every time I see the episode, I still think the Borg are legitimately scary. I also have the same confusion on the maturation chamber. I guess if the Borg assimilate young, they put the kids in the chamber, as we saw with the kids in Voyager. Yeah, thanks for your comment, Greg. That's a good point. I think I always just assumed that the maturation chamber was for like infants of unassimilated species. They just get thrown in the chamber until they come out as full-sized drones.
You know, I never thought of assimilating, you know, newborns and children like that, but it actually does make sense. And thank you, Greg, for your comment, because like they go and assimilate entire civilizations, and those civilizations are going to have children. And so it does make sense to have it there. So
absolutely.
Yeah.
But what happens if the Borg assimilated like a pregnant woman? Do you know what I mean? What would they do? Would like the nanites assimilate the unborn baby as well?
Well, and maybe they take, depending on the time period, you know, 9 months in or whatever, that they do a C-section or something and take the baby and put it in a maturation chamber, or otherwise not assimilate them and just kill them.
I don't think they do a C-section though. I think the Borg nanites basically create a doorway, like a wee hatch thing, like a Borg hatch, that when the 9 months happens, like the sections all kind of move apart from each other and the baby comes out,
On
a wee tray, possibly.
Possibly.
Mm-hmm. But I definitely think if we see the Borg, like the proper Borg in the future, you know, the way TV's gone, like in the 21st century, it's all really dark. We've got Game of Thrones, we've got The Walking Dead, and it's Star Trek Picard, and it's really gruesome and dark.
Mm-hmm.
I think if we see the Borg, we'll see them being like really malevolently evil, and they won't rip one eye out, they'll rip both eyes out and replace them, and they'll be screaming in blood and pain and death.
Yeah, we saw a little bit of that of Picard, yeah.
We did, yeah. It was horrible.
Well, we have Johnson Lai, who writes, "Great discussion. How I've always reconciled regeneration with the timeline is, after the episode, Starfleet must have set up a small research group. But because the threat was so far away, if they were coming at all, it eventually fell to the wayside, even becoming a myth. But then the Hansons found the research, which was why they knew so much before setting off to the Delta Quadrant. Didn't Aaron Hansen say even their colleagues thought they were crazy? This could explain why Picard never heard of these cybernetic creatures, because nobody had thought about them in over 100 years. So thank you for your comment. And, you know, with the very few small mentions before Q Who, like we were talking Enterprise regeneration, that it definitely could have become a myth. So I'm sort of liking that idea, Johnson. Thanks for your comment.
Yeah, it kind of stands to reason because like maybe some like 200 years have passed. Like Enterprise was set before the founding of the Federation, right at its infancy. So yeah, it would stand to reason that things would be lost in the annals of time.
Yeah.
So Amy, what are we talking about today?
Well, today's topic comes from a listener, Kimberly Lawler. So we dedicate this episode to you, Kimberly. And listeners, if you want us to discuss something you've been thinking about, absolutely reach out to us. We're happy to take your ideas. Now, Kimberly's great idea is to do a character profile on Jack Crusher. So I'm very excited. I don't think that we have spoken at length about Jack Crusher.
I certainly haven't really thought so much as I have about Jack Crusher as I have done in the past, like, 2 hours.
Right.
So.
So there are 3 episodes where he makes an appearance, that is in Family, Violations, and Journey's End, and usually through holograms. But he is mentioned in quite a few episodes, Encounter at Farpoint, Coming of Age, Conspiracy, The Icarus Factor, Evolution, The Bonding, The Price, Remember Me, True Q, and Attached. So those are the episodes that we are pulling from for this discussion. Now, Joe, I just got to ask, that's a lot of episodes. Did you watch them all, or just what did you do to prepare for this?
Yeah, I've watched all the episodes in the last 2 hours. Yes, I'm very well prepared. I had them all on at the same time, like simultaneous viewing kind of thing. Mm. Like Data listening to all the music.
Right, yes.
Yeah, that's clearly what I did. See, when you say appearances, Family, Violations, and Journey's End, like only one of them were holographic. The other two, like Violations, it was just a vision.
Yeah, that Beverly had.
Through that mind assault that she went through of going to visit his dead body in the morgue with Picard. And then Journey's End was Wesley having some kind of
vision quest.
Yeah. Or acid trip.
Oh,
or whatever.
Okay.
He drank from those Native American folk.
So, yeah, I guess there is just only that one hologram, and the other two are in the mind's eye, I guess you could say.
Yeah, I suppose. And then we do get a little bit of more information from the other episodes that you mentioned.
Yeah, and again, it's not really worth watching all of them because they're just small mentions of it, you know?
Uh-huh.
So
it's like maybe a sentence Beverly says, right, and yeah. That's it. It's
yeah.
Relating a story to Jack, or was it in Family where she's telling Troy she gets his possessions from Starfleet, and she finds the book, the
how to advance your career through marriage.
Yes.
And that was how he, asked her to marry him.
Yes, in 2348.
Yes. So there was one that I found very interesting, which we had covered previously on Earl Grey 293, because there was a deleted scene from Family, and we get a little bit of history of Jack Crusher's family, where his ancestors were great men and considered heroes by Jack. One was fought in the American Civil War on the Confederate side at the Battle of Bull Run, and another ancestor died in the surprise attack on Station Salem 1. And unfortunately, that was a deleted scene, but we have covered it in Earl Grey 293. So we do get a little bit more of his history. But again, I don't know if it really adds too much to Jack Crusher or not.
It reminded me of the Confederate side. Is that the good guys or the bad guys?
That's the bad guys.
American Civil War.
That's the South.
Oh, right, okay. I see now. Confederate flags that people still fly. And we're like,
No,
please don't fly that. Yes. Okay, so interesting that would have been considered a hero, even though he fought on the Confederate side.
Yeah. But I think he could be like a hero in the way that he acted as an officer, his courage and, you know, in fighting a war that he believed in, I would assume.
Okay, I get you. Now that's
so.
Is the Battle of Bull Run a real?
Yes, it is.
A real battle.
Yes, it is.
Every day's a history lesson.
Yeah.
When you're not American, in Station Salem, one was mentioned by Picard, and The Price. There was a sneak attack.
Okay, so yeah, let's jump to that. So how did he die? Because I just know.
Did you read about his death?
Well, I just read that he was killed on an away mission while he was serving on the Stargazer with Picard.
Yes. So it's covered in a book. And if Justin was here, he'd be able to tell us what the book was about. The book was called, correct me if I'm wrong, the TNG novel Reunion.
Oh, yeah, I've read that book.
Okay, so apparently, if I'm reading this right, the Stargazer encountered an unknown anomaly that was later termed the Nancy phenomenon. Okay, the ship's a bit crippled, and there's a dangerous energy buildup in one of its nacelles. And Captain Picard sends Jack Crusher and Lieutenant Peter Joseph, who volunteered to go outside the ship in spacesuits, with phaser rifles, and detach one of the nacelles with phaser rifles. But Lieutenant Joseph has a panic attack. Don't know why anybody called Joseph would have a panic attack. They are brave people. Has a panic attack and feigns passing out. And ultimately, that's what kills Crusher. He goes to detach the nacelle himself and later dies. But I'm really stuck on the point, I've not read the book, I'm stuck on the point that they detached one of the nacelles with a phaser rifle.
Yeah, that seems really dangerous.
Or just really unbelievable. Like, it was either the most powerful phaser rifle in existence, or it was just a really rubbish nacelle strut. Now, the connector bits that connected the cells to the body of the ship.
Yeah, that's like trying to saw down a tree with a butter knife.
I can imagine trying that. Yeah, it's just not going to happen. It's going to take you a real long time. Yeah, so I don't really know. Maybe there's more to it. Maybe they put extra batteries in the phaser rifle. But that's how he died.
Well, maybe they boost, you know, they're always boosting things.
Or maybe it's like a cage. Now they beam down the big giant phaser turret to try and blow a hole in the mountain so they can get to the Colossians. And the Enterprise is beaming power down to the phaser turret.
Yeah, they do use the phasers a lot on like rock beds and faces and stuff like that. So,
yeah, so maybe it's something like that. But I'm assuming our listeners will correct us or tell us exactly what happened to make it sound more believable if they have read TNG's Reunion.
So the officer Joseph and Jack Crusher were outside, they obviously were able to gather their dead bodies because Picard brings Jack Crusher back to Beverly.
There's a bit on memory beta. Lieutenant Joseph panicked and left Crusher alone, feigned unconsciousness when he saw Picard on his way to retrieve his men. So the captain actually goes outside to retrieve them, weirdly.
Well, wouldn't they beam them or tractor beam them?
The book might have been a bit shorter.
Okay.
If it just, I mean, you could have just beamed a phaser outside the ship and remote controlled it. Do you know what I mean? Put it on some kind of...
a drone?
Something like that. A DOT-7, maybe. So Picard ended up saving Lieutenant Joseph first and then going back to get Crusher, but by that time it was too late to save Crusher. He'd already succumbed to his injuries. Some kind of skull injury, because when you see his body in the morgue, he's got a bunch of scars down one side of his face and it looks like his... it kind of looks like his head's been severed or his neck's been cut in some way, because there's a big kind of lateral scar right around his head in that scene. And then, obviously, Picard takes the body back to, we imagine, Earth, where Beverly and the young Wesley Crusher, who is 5 at this point, waiting. And then I don't imagine he presents the body to them. He just takes the body back to Earth and says, sorry, your husband and father have died.
And we see what Crusher remembers in Violations, right? Because she has that memory of it.
Yes.
And that's, it's interesting that they would have that be the memory that she remembers in that episode. You know, they could have had her reliving the birth of her firstborn child, Wesley.
Is there not something about that episode that the way that they do it, they want the... it has to be like a negative emotion or something, a negative memory?
Well, not necessarily, because Keiko's memory is of her grandmother with the water paintings on the scrolls. And that's a nice memory that Keiko has.
Yeah, but the guy that's doing it, the bad guy, is he not wanting the dark stuff?
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're right that was the father that did it. And then when the son does it, he gets to the dark side.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. So I think that's maybe why that Beverly automatically went to one of her most painful memories, because he fed on that, I suppose, didn't he?
So we talked about that he obviously has a sense of humor, because he asked Beverly to marry him by this gag book, How to Advance Your Career Through Marriage, which I think is totally cute. And it seems like that they were a pretty happy family from all that we gather, right? Because,
as happy as you can be, being in a long-distance relationship, because he's serving aboard the Stargazer with Picard and Beverly's back home looking after Wesley, being a doctor, we imagine. I'm assuming there's details elsewhere that we've got more information about what their relationship was like, but I think it's hard to have a family.
Yeah, there has to have been something, because I read Q Squared, and was on Literary Treks discussing it. And that book talks about sort of their early marriage before there's Wesley, and that they both were serving on the Stargazer with Picard. And so there must be some time, like, because she gets pregnant, that she chooses to go back to Earth or to leave the Stargazer because it's not a good idea to raise a kid.
I don't think you could at that point, maybe, because the Galaxy-class starships were the first ones with families on board. And having a child, being a Starfleet officer, wasn't going to happen, especially on a small ship like the Stargazer. Possibly. So, yeah, so that was Q-squared. I read a synopsis of Q-squared.
It's a good book.
A bit brutal.
Yes.
Spoiler alert, if you haven't read it, about Q-squared in an alternate universe. The character of Trelane from the original series basically tells Jack Crusher, who's still alive, and he's captain of the Enterprise. At this point?
It's been a while since I've read it. So,
alternate universe, Jack Crusher's captain of the Enterprise. Trelane comes, who I imagine is part of the Q Continuum, and tells them that he is the only Jack Crusher in all the universes. This kind of turns him a bit crazy, and he kills himself and Beverly in front of the Prime Picard that we know.
Yes.
And I'm like, that's dark.
Yeah, it's a very good book. I would highly recommend it.
Mm.
Yeah. It's very interesting how it's written also, because you have, like you said, this alternate timeline and then our prime timeline, and it bounces back and forth, and it's pretty cool.
Probably enough to confuse me.
It is confusing, because I remember being so confused going, what is going on? And then the next chapter, it's completely different. And then you get the hang of it. But
I could read it if only I could read. So I might listen to the audiobook instead.
Well, you're making me want to reread Reunion, because I have that book. I mean, it's locked up at school. I haven't been able to get back to my classroom, but I do own the book.
I wish I read more, and I've not really had the opportunity. I normally do audiobooks in my commute to work, so I can do like an audiobook a week. But with no commute,
I know,
there's been no books.
The commute, my podcast listening has decreased seriously.
It's like dwindled to nothing.
Yeah.
So yeah, reading a book is quite a big time commitment. Do you know what I mean? It's like you have to actually be in the mood to sit down and read a book. And I think, and I like to be quite active, and reading a book is quite a sedentary activity. I know TV watching is like that, but that you can watch an episode of Star Trek, which is 45 minutes. But reading a book is like a significant commitment.
So, sidebar, I was moving out and buying my first house and starting my career as a teacher. And that's when I was really getting into the Next Gen. They had the DVDs out and I was going to the library reading all these books. And so for my new house, I specifically went and purchased a reading chair. I went, Joe, no joke, to at least 5-6 different stores, sat in every chair. And it's like, okay, can I sit and read a book in this chair? Is it comfortable? Are there lots of different positions? You know, because you get a little, need the positions as you're reading these books. And it took me at least 2 months to find the perfect reading chair. And it came with an ottoman, and I had that chair for years, and I had read many TNG novels in that chair. And now that I'm here in Las Vegas and have moved so many times, I mean, that was 20 years ago, literally, I don't have a nice, comfortable reading chair. And that's my problem.
Where's your comfy reading chair? I didn't even know reading chairs were a thing.
What?
Is that like an aisle in IKEA? The reading chair aisle?
No, I just was, it, I had, it was an overstuffed, but not a recliner chair. I don't like recliner chairs. I was an overstuffed chair with an ottoman, very wide, and I don't know, it was just the perfect chair. And I had that for many, many years. And I've noticed that I'm like, okay, I need to read this book. And I don't like reading on a couch for some reason. It's not comfortable. I'm fine to watch TV on a couch, but I need to get a reading chair.
My problem is like holding a book up. I mean,
well, that's why you get a pillow and put it on your lap.
But then you're like have to hunch over, or do you?
No, your pillow has to be kind of puts it eye level.
Confused. Okay. To think about this more. Did you see, talking about books, did you see that image? It was a meme that came out a couple of weeks ago, and it was about the problem of having multiple tabs open on your browser.
No, I didn't.
And it being an age-old problem. And there was the image was of an old piece of apparatus at a university that researchers used when they were researching multiple books. So it allowed them to have multiple books open at the same page, but rotate the whole thing around. And the books, basically, they would have one book open on like a plank of wood, and then they'd have to go to another book. So they'd just rotate the whole thing around like a Rolodex, but a big, giant, massive one. And the books, as it rotated around, the platforms that the books lay upon would always stay horizontal.
Oh,
so the book
okay.
never fell off, which was kind of genius. So it was like this age-old problem of having multiple tabs open or having to research multiple books. I kind of like that. Not something you could really have in your house, because this was a
big apparatus.
I'll try and find a picture and I'll send you it so you know what I'm talking about.
So I also like knowing in the price. Beverly says that
thought you were talking about the price of books. Oh. Anything over $10 is too much. The price, the episode.
The episode, the price. And okay. Beverly says that Jack was pursuing her and it took her 2 months mm-hmm. to figure out, hey, this guy might be a possibility. So I like that he, you know, stayed with her and was like courting her. And so that's
it's kind of really old fashioned, isn't
yeah.
it? Almost this idea of courting and being pursued, but not in a creepy way. Just he was making an effort
yeah.
to get her attention.
Well, and I
he
think
saw something in her.
If I put my shoes in Beverly's shoes, like she was developing career.
Put your feet
put
in Beverly's
shoes. Put my feet in Beverly's shoes.
Don't put your shoes in Beverly's shoes, because unless you've got really small shoes.
But you know, she's, you know, working on her career. She's been through Starfleet Academy and through medical. And so I definitely can understand her not recognizing his advancements and his attention, you know, for a little bit longer. Cause she obviously, as we see in the series, she's very focused and she, you know, has a passion for her career. And sometimes when you are passion driven, you sort of miss what else is going on. So kudos for Jack for hanging in there and saying, hey, Beverly,
yeah,
notice me.
It's the 24th century. It's not the 1950s. Kind of the job of a woman isn't to kind of marry early, have children, stay at home. She was a career-minded woman, and that is allowed in 2020. So never mind in the 24th century. But yeah, I suppose if you are, you can have that kind of blinkered monocular vision. This is what you want. This is the path you're on, and to hell with everything else. This is what I'm going to get for myself. So, yeah, I get that.
Now, did you have that year that when Wesley was born?
He was born 2348, I believe.
Okay, so Jack and Beverly met in 2340, which was revealed to us in Conspiracy by a mutual friend, Walter Kill. So I was looking, so at 2340, they were introduced. obviously a couple months for Beverly to figure out. There obviously was some courting time period. And so 2348, Wesley was born. So that's a good amount of time to have time together, which makes sense for what I read in Q Squared. They were together on the Stargazer with Picard. And then
yes.
Wesley comes along.
And then in 2353, Jack dies when Wesley is 5 years old. And you remember the name Walter Keel, don't you? Because Walter Keel is one of the captains that Picard is instructed to meet on Daedalus B.
Yes, secretively.
Yes.
Yes.
And then Walter Keel is captain of the USS Horatio, which is later destroyed.
Yes.
And the whole right. episode conspiracy with the little worm things that go in you, the back of your neck, yeah. control you.
Yep.
So.
So she had, like I said, 13 years with Jack Crusher all together from meeting him till his death. And it's pretty awesome because with my mother, she met her true love. This would have been her third husband. And they had a total of 10 years together. And although it's very short, like seeing my mother so happy for those 10 years was completely worth it. I wish she could have had more, but it just didn't work out that way. But even that short amount of time, I think, has really changed her, obviously, and changed our family dynamic in those 10 years that we had with him. His name was Bob. Absolutely gold. So
that's a lovely story. I kind of had the problem earlier when I was reading about this, that so much time has passed between Jack dying and Beverly being on the Enterprise with Picard. Why hasn't she moved on? Jack seems to still be a big figure a lot in her life. I suppose they had a son together, so that maybe makes a difference. But looking at the time difference, they met in 2340, he died in 2353. That's kind of the same length of time as Ewan and I have been together. It's for like 14 years for Ewan and I. So I'm like, yeah, if Ewan died, I'm like, I don't want to get all soppy and sentimental, but where do I see myself in like 20 years' time? Will I have moved on? I don't know. It's an interesting, not one that's worth really thinking about, because given the times we live in, we don't want to go down that spiral of despair again. So yeah, it does. It's not a long relationship. I don't think 13 years. They didn't have that much time together.
Yeah. You know, interesting you bring that up, because I have an aunt who obviously was married. They had 5 children together. I mean, obviously more than 13 years together, but he passed away 35 years ago. And my aunt never remarried, never was in another relationship. Like she still is alive. She is still devoted and has told her kids, he is my husband and I will stay with him until I die.
That's
so I don't know if moving on is the right thing. I think it really depends on that relationship that you have and how comfortable you are being alone, not lonely, but being alone and going through life independent.
Not being in a relationship, yeah. That's an interesting quandary, isn't it? Well, I don't know how I feel about that. Do I? The problem is, if we go back to last week's discussion on whether or not there's an afterlife, yeah? If you have, say, you go through your life and you have, say, just 2 husbands or wives that you loved deeply and entirely until they passed, then the potential is that you go to the afterlife and see them as like, oh dear, all my exes in one place. Never mind having 4 husbands and them all having three wives and stuff. So,
well, it sort of reminds you of Dr. Phlox from Enterprise, right?
It does, yes, with this, I don't know, what's the term given to that?
They would all that have, be open? I don't know.
Is it? They all, but is it an open relationship? Because each...
Because they're sort of committed, but committed to a large number of people.
This extended...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like polygamy gone... Like, it's the polygamy chain reaction, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, where polygamy on steroids.
Yeah, I think we got the name of this episode. Yeah, I don't know about that. So I suppose we've, like, both of us have had multiple relationships with people throughout the years. When we were thinking, focusing only on the good ones at the time. And the people you think back fondly on, let's say. And we've all moved on from them. So moving on is possible. But with the one, if we think there's a one person, they are the one. I don't necessarily believe that there's a one.
Yeah, I don't believe that there is one person. But to your point, like that first relationship, and if they pass and then we have another relationship, and then, like you said, we die, there's this afterlife, who are you going to be with? Like, wouldn't the first one be an automatic no because you have already gone through the emotions of living life without them? So you've made that transition of being not with them?
But who are they going to be with in the afterlife?
Well, maybe they met someone in the afterlife. It's the like afterlife.
A speed dating in heaven kind of thing? Okay, possibly. Okay, I don't know.
Wow. We have gone off on a tangent, listeners.
We have indeed, yes. Wow. Let's get back on track then.
Okay. Well, let's talk about how do you think Wesley. So how do you think Jack was as a father to Wesley? What were your impressions there?
Okay. So timeline-wise, it's a bit confusing because there's only 5 years of Wesley's life that Jack was alive. But apparently in one of the books, we see that Jack has taught Wesley to play baseball at some point. I'm not sure when that would have been. When did it tie up? Because five, learning to play baseball when you're five, I don't imagine that's going to go very well. And if it was, you can imagine, maybe he could have taken shore leave back to Earth. And he was on a vacation kind of thing.
For sure.
Okay, that's probably the way it was.
Yeah.
He just back to Earth, and while he was there, he taught him when he was 4 or 5 before he died. Okay, that works
okay.
In my head canon. Listeners, let me know, fill in the blanks.
Well, we also learn in Attached that he took his family on camping trips. So mm-hmm. There definitely had to have been some shore leave and some time off and enough to go camping.
Camping in the 21st century would be really cool, I think.
At Balfour Lake.
Sounds
it's
nice.
It's always lovely to go camping in the mountains by a lake.
Balfour is a famous Scottish name, I'm sure. Arthur Balfour was an ex-Prime Minister of the United Kingdom.
Interesting.
That's how I knew the name. And I'm sure there's a construction company called Balfour. Interesting. We also know that Jack's didn't have the same relationship with his father that he wanted to have with Jack, or because his relationship with his father wasn't so good, he made a conscious effort to be a kind of a better role model for Wesley, and did all these things that teach him how to play baseball and take him on camping trips. So there's that we learn.
Well, and we also know he would have been a great father, as you're saying, because if he was doing the opposite of what his father did, he was wanting to record messages for Wesley mm-hmm. every year. And we see that in Family, where he turns 18 and Beverly gives him that first message. And oh, that just warms my heart. I like having that idea that you know, the father is going to pass along his wisdom and just take some time to reflect on the first year and the years thereafter. Like, well, your second year, da, 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 I've noticed this. And I have a baby book that my mom wrote in, and she will describe things that, you know, little anecdotal stories that, you know, happened my first year, my second year. And those are just so precious to me. So I like that Jack was wanting to do this, and it really shows his commitment to be a father.
I like that idea. I like the way Wesley plays it in the episode Family, where he goes into the holodeck and he's really reticent to start the program. Because, like, being five when your father dies, you're going to have very limited memories of your interactions, if any. So I can see him being like, do I actually want to play this? He's going through all sorts of emotions before he actually does it. Well, I think it's a good decision he actually does it, because it's a really lovely, poignant moment and a really good message that Jack has for him. I love all these stories that your parents tell you about when you were born and when you were kind of really young, too young to remember. And it's almost as if that your brain, through these stories, makes up the memory.
Yeah, it bridges.
So it feels like a memory, even though it's just a story that was relayed to you. So I'm going to, my mum loves telling this story to people, and it's like deeply embarrassing, but I'm going to tell it anyway. So apparently when I was about 2, I think, I was potty training. Do you have potty training?
Yep.
It's like a plastic toilet that babies use. Okay. So I don't know what sequence of events was. My dad smoked at the time, so my dad's ashtray was involved. And it hadn't been emptied, so it was full of cigarettes and ash. So let's tell it in order from least disgusting to most disgusting. I, as a newly clean, kind of new baby grow, I was like spotless, decided to crawl over to my dad's ashtray, get the contents and eat them and wipe them everywhere, cigarette ends and ash all over my lovely clean baby grow. So my mom came in, saw me, and was like, okay, just sheer disgust, grabbed me, put me directly into the bath, stripped me, got me clean, fresh clothes, sparkling clean, yeah, put me on my potty, yeah, to do what one does on the potty. And then she went away again to do whatever mums do when you're 2. And I came back and I got off the potty and I'd done my stuff in the potty and proceeded to grab it and wipe it all everywhere and eat it and everything all over. Mom came in.
Oh,
and the previous look of disgust was nothing compared to
that.
So yeah, again, I get grabbed, put in the bath and like bleached.
Oh my gosh, that's adorable.
Super disgusting. You heard it here first, listeners. I ate my own poop when I was 2.
But that's how kids process and learn, is to experience it.
So I must have had some kind of brain abnormality, like Chalaff syndrome or something. Yeah.
Wow.
To be honest, I've never eaten a cigarette or eaten my own poop since.
Since then, see, you learned.
I learned a valuable lesson.
Valuable.
See, next time I'm at like Destination Star Trek or STLV and people recognize my voice.
Yes.
Instead, are you joking from Earl Grey? Like, no, you're joking that you ate your own poop. And I'm like, oh, okay, thanks. So all those little stories that your parents tell you, so invaluable.
Yeah.
And like we were saying last week about legacy, it's about all those little stories are important to hand down to generations, and a lot of them will just get lost.
Yeah.
So we've got the internet, so we have to record them and put them down and for generations later on to listen, why did that guy eat his poop? What did he do back in like 1979, whenever it was? It's weird humans.
But I like that Wesley gets to see Jack, because I'm, like you're saying, like, I'm sure Beverly told little stories, but I don't know that he would have had that strong of a visual image of his own father. I mean, I guess maybe through pictures or holograms.
Yeah, like you could go to the holodeck and say recreate an image of a father.
Yeah, or like Data had of Tasha, you know, that little...
Yeah, little...
Yeah.
Doohickey. Yeah, possibly. So, I don't know. We'd like to imagine, given the technology, that he would have had a visual record of...
Yeah, yeah, that that's true.
Embedded in his mind.
Because I wanted to see, because like in Journey's End, it's more of Wesley's mind recreating his father, and it's not exactly what Jack Crusher would say, because this is what Wesley is thinking his father would say.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't really know if Jack Crusher would be follow your own path. I mean, it makes sense that he would, as any good father would encourage their child to follow your dreams and your passion. But again, this is Wesley's mind twisting it to hear what he wants to hear so that he gives himself permission to follow the traveler.
That's the most likely thing. Although with the involvement of the traveler, there's nothing to suggest that it wasn't some timey-wimey stuff going on, and that's what Jack Crusher would actually have said. But there's no evidence to say that. So yeah, we'll go with the simplest explanation. It was just Wesley hoping that's what his father would say, given the snippets of information he had about him.
Yeah. Because I think Wesley was looking for permission to leave Starfleet in his mind, because he's always been the rule follower, always trying to live up to everyone else's expectations.
Yeah, unfairly so because he was a teenager on a ship of adults, and for what we see is few friends apart from that one deleted scene.
Yeah.
We've got all the kids in the neon. I suppose I get what you're saying. His brain is making up a message from his dad to say, this is okay. You follow your own path. You follow your heart. And never mind that both your parents were in Starfleet and you come from a line of Starfleet officers. If it's not right for you, that's fine. The universe is your oyster.
So I want to ask you, because I see a lot of Wesley's traits in my students. Like, some students are so willing and wanting to please me as a teacher and to do the right things and to get that smile or, you know, the little tap on the shoulder of good job. You know, they crave that. And So I see Wesley so much, or I see my students so much in Wesley, and I really do like Journey's End, because it's at that point when Wesley takes it on himself and makes choices for himself, not based on others' expectations. And I think it's a really good stage in a youth's development to get to that point, because you hope that in those younger years, in the teenage years, that they're learning the values and morals of people who are around you that, you know, have good standards and that teach you to be a continual learner and to, you know, self-evaluate and look at yourself and what you're going to contribute. You know, so we have those teachers, parents, mentors, and then making that leap to, okay, I have this strong background. I have this foundation of love and trust from others. Now I'm going to go out on my own. And I just think it's a very beautiful story that I see so many of my students go through.
That's a really good point. And a lot of times, especially now we're in lockdown and we're teaching remotely, a lot of the students that you maybe didn't have so much kind of communication with because they were just really quiet and just sat and got on with their work, now is a time where they're coming out and they don't have to put their hand up to ask for help. They can just send you an email, okay? And it's all those little interactions which are really nice to have. And it's not been kind of the vast majority of students. It's maybe just one or two or a handful that are coming out and who wouldn't have said Booty Goose before, but they're they're at home and they're trying their best. And while they might not be very able scientists, they are trying to follow my instructions and submit something that I can have a look at. They're trying to please me, essentially, which is really nice. Still hate teaching from home, as it's not teaching.
No.
You don't have half the interaction you have.
The worst.
Yeah. It is. But yeah, interestingly, I think I mentioned to you earlier, Amy, I had spent the last couple of days collating pupil work from across our school and editing it together as a video. I did want to use the track "We're All In This Together" from High School Musical. But obviously, it's copyrighted and you can't just throw it in your own video because YouTube will just flag it and the YouTube police will come and get you. So I had this weird brainstorm like I do and decided to get all my school show kids to record them singing the track and send me the file. And then I edited it together as a virtual choir.
Oh, awesome.
Which isn't perfect, but do you know what? We sound like we're singing together, so it's quite nice.
Oh, that is so cool.
Yeah, it's nice. Never really edited videos together or edited audio in that way, apart from podcasts. But when you're dealing with like 10 different people singing at the same time and they all have to sing each word at the same time, it became a bit tricky, but it was a good experience and I liked doing that for the school community, so it was worth it. It was one of the upsides to lockdown, I suppose.
Yeah. So obviously Jack Crusher and Jean-Luc Picard were friends. Do we know much about their friendship?
We don't know. I always imagined that they were friends. I think I maybe read it somewhere that they were friends at the academy.
Yes.
Which kind of confuses me because then why wasn't Jack Crusher in Tapestry?
Yeah. That was exactly where my brain went. So maybe they after. Met
just after, yeah, when they were first posted together. They were best friends while Picard was on the Stargazer and Jack served as the science officer and then later as the second officer. Same position as Data, I suppose. Second officer and science officer. I got that impression from what I read. And then ultimately died. I don't really know. I'm assuming listeners will let us know when they met because it'll be in a book somewhere. But we don't really know. The only thing I know is that Picard had feelings for Beverly while Jack and Beverly were together. And I'm like, oh, that's dicey territory.
Yes, it is. And it is explored in Q squared.
I suppose the good thing about Picard is that he didn't act on it.
Yeah.
Even after Jack died because he felt that it would betray his friendship with him.
Yeah, that's a very complex relationship that he has with Beverly and Jack, mm-hmm. sort of that triangle. He didn't act on it. And even after his death, when it could have been okay, especially after the amount of time after Jack's death, you know, that he could have gone in, made his moves, but he didn't.
It's more than, when did TNG start? 2365? Let's go for 65, half. In the middle. So that's a whole 12 years after Jack died. So enough time has passed. Enough separation between them has passed. So, and then there was always something between them, this deep bond of friendship. But we only really learn, I think, in Attached, mm-hmm. when their minds are linked together and have this telepathic link, that how fond Picard has been of Beverly for all this time. But it's not creepy or uncomfortable.
No, it's not.
It's okay.
Yeah,
it's,
it is.
Dealt with sensitively.
It seems that when we talk about Picard's friendship with Jack, it's always in the realm of Wesley. Like, it seems like in the bonding, you know, Wesley is sort of reliving and... what is it? Evolution? I can't remember, but it's like Picard really struggles with the choice that he made that caused Jack's death. And so I think we see that more whenever Picard is dealing with Wesley, or whenever Wesley is having to, you know, sort of deal with his father's death, like when he was sharing his experience in the bonding with that kid.
Yes, I suppose there's that back thought of like, oh, Captain Picard killed my dad and then himself and aboard his ship. Do you think they're so explicit in it, but there's a feeling there. And I think they maybe mention it when Wesley's talking to, is it Jeremy Astor?
No. Oh,
is that the difference? Is that the
I know,
one?
I get those two boys mixed up. The bonding is the one. Yeah, is it? Yeah, because that's the one where Worf, and it's season two with Pulaski. And Worf feels completely guilty for Marla Astor's death.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah. And they're like, well, maybe Wesley can talk to him. Yeah.
So what's the one that Data gets befriended with the wee boy, and the wee boy slicks his hair back, and then Data builds the old thing?
I know, I love that one. That's like...
Oh, what's that? The same episode, I'm sure.
No, it's like we're... not imaginary friend. Oh my gosh. Hero worship.
Yes, that's it. Yes. What's that boy's name?
Timothy. I know, I get those two so mixed up all the time.
It's just, he's just called Timothy. He doesn't actually have a name, just Timothy. I always like to look up really young TNG actors and see what they look like now.
Oh, yeah.
Because obviously they're maybe a wee bit younger than me, so they'll all be like in their 40s or 50s now. Friends, that we really don't know, but they're... much about the friendship, apart from Picard. I suppose you can infer something about the depth of the friendship, because Picard felt compelled to bring his body home rather than just transporting it to another ship that was en route to Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Because of their, obviously they had this friendship with Beverly as well.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Yeah, that's quite honorable of Picard to do that. So, final thoughts. This has been interesting in part because we don't have a lot to go on with Jack. And although there are a list of episodes where he is mentioned, it's like mentioned in passing that there's one, you know, sentence or two, and then... it's not even a plot, right? It's not even a B plot. It's just a mention, except in Family. And I would say Journey's End, maybe. But in Violations, it's not even part of the plot. You know, it's just an experience that Beverly has. So
yeah, and it's not even Jack. He's dead at that point. So it's just like a body on a slab, isn't it?
Yeah. So. And so to try and come up with who is Jack Crusher, I think we've done a fairly good job. I think we've learned a lot about his relationship with Beverly. I'm very impressed with his desire to be a good father and to Wesley. And he obviously was a good friend to Picard. So realizing those relationships helps us to understand who he was as a character and how important he was, obviously, in Beverly's life, that she never took on another mate, I guess you could say.
Apart from that ghost in the lamp. To be honest, I was kind of not, let's just say I wasn't looking forward to this episode at all. It was like Jack Crusher, and then I spent a while researching. I was like, I still have nothing to say. There's nothing about him. But with everything, it's a discussion. Some, like Amy, you'll say something and then that'll make me think something else. And then a conversation will start and there'll be a dialogue and we'll tease out what we think the character of Jack Crusher could have been like. But before we started recording, I was like, ugh, I just want to go outside and sit in the sun. This sounds interminably dull. But I hope that we've kind of done it justice. I'm sure our listeners, being the amazing listeners that they are, will help us fill in all the little details that we potentially have missed. So thank you, Amy.
Absolutely, yes. And thank you, Kimberly, for a great topic idea and pushing us to explore a not so well-known character.
Yeah. Thank you, Kimberly, for pushing us to discuss things that we didn't want to discuss. So that's that.
Well, it's been interesting talking about Jack Crusher today, but that isn't the only thing we've been discussing here on the network. Here is what you might have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, the Orb.
But of all the Section 31 that we're getting in New Trek, this feels the most legitimate. This feels like the Section 31 that we know from Deep Space Nine, and it doesn't feel like, oh, we're just going back to the well again, because, you know, even Iris said, you know, I know they've used it in the movies, but we created this.
Earl Grey.
Still no clue. I'm going to kick myself when I get it.
Yeah, tell us, Jim.
Kirsten Dunst.
Oh my gosh, of course.
I hate the universe.
Oh my gosh, I knew that. What's wrong with us?
The best Loxana performance in all seven seasons, in my opinion.
Literary Treks.
If this were an episode of Voyager, and I actually think this book would make an interesting episode of Voyager, and like we kind of hinted at, maybe it's very much like an episode of Voyager that we'll talk about. I don't think it would have been called Seven of Nine, right?
No. No, it would have to have like a one-word title to fit in with most of the other Voyager episodes, so you can't really remember which one it's about.
Yeah, it would just be called Seven. That's what it would be.
To the journey!
She did actually mean what she said in the back in the space just before they die. I don't know, I just kind of like it. It's just
I'm
going to
tell you I love you just before I die. Not a minute sooner.
It's like, at least I don't have to deal with the ramifications if I'm dead. Well, that backfired.
Or maybe she was just like, at least I don't have to hear him not say it if we're going to die.
So what you're saying is next time that we ask someone to marry them, or anyone who asks someone to marry them, they should do it on death's door of like some kind of crazy adventure, like jumping off a bungee jump.
You're in the middle of being eaten by a shark or something.
I love you, gobble, gobble, gobble.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
It's a proper manly name, isn't it? We didn't mention that. Jack Crusher.
Mm.
It's like a Jason Bourne, isn't it?
Oh,
Jack Crusher.
It is a great name.
Isn't it? It's that Jack, John, yeah, it's short. Like Jason, James Bond, they're short. That J sounds, they're stabby. Then Crusher just sounds like a strong, big, manly man, doesn't it?
Yeah, with the Jack ending with that strong
cuss
sound, and then Crusher starting with another strong cuss sound. Yeah. I like it.
Squash, crush your skull.
It's almost like Joe Keegan. That's a strong name.
That's a strong name.
See, I followed your lead right into it, Joe. I got you.
You did. I thank you for that. Amy, yours is a softer name, isn't it?
Yeah.
Amy Nelson.
Yeah, the vowels where the consonants bring the strength.
Mm-hmm. Like Aphrodite.
Oh.
The Greek goddess of love,
oh.
Amy Nelson. Just, they're one and the same, I imagine. Anyways, check out all these shows and join the conversation about your favourite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPad or Apple TV, or the desktop Apple Podcasts app to get the latest episodes as soon as they are published. And please leave us a star rating and written review. It helps others find the show.
If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, YouTube, in most third-party apps, and you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link.
We'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show, and there are many ways for you to do that. The best place to join in the larger conversation is the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, B B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and it should come right up.
If you'd like to send us an email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose to send to a show and select Earl Grey. That will come right to us, and we might read your email on the show. You can also find the network on Twitter and Instagram at TrekFM, and on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. Bonus question, Joe?
Do you know what? I was just thinking about a bonus question. I was like, I don't have one. So yeah, I'm so thankful that you've thought of a bonus question. Please tell me it.
Well, it sort of goes off of Jack Crusher's deleted scene about his ancestors. So do you have an ancestor that you consider a hero?
No, do you know what? I don't really know much about my... I can go back to my grandparents and I don't know much after that. Before that. I know my paternal grandfather... when he was younger, I think, I don't know if this story is true or not, but he moved from a town called Kilsyth, which I think is roughly in between Edinburgh and Glasgow in the central belt of Scotland. And the name was Keegan's at the time, with an S at the end. He moved to Clydebank, the town that I'm from, and he dropped the S. I know it's not particularly heroic, and I don't know why he did it, but it's a snippet of information.
It is. I know. Interesting. Okay.
But I think you're right. I think I have to, because my parents won't be here forever and they're the ones that are more likely to know more of the stories. So it's maybe a good time, especially during these times, to try and record as much of that information as possible. Amy, what about you? Do you have any weird and wacky, wonderful, heroic ancestors?
I have a lot of stories, but I don't know that they're weird and wacky. But
your great, 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 great grandmother was Calamity Jane or something.
Yeah, right. No, but I was always growing up on my ancestors who crossed the plains, the pioneers. And the struggles that they went through. But one in particular I just really consider a hero is my great-grandmother, maternal side. And she was, so this had to have been late 1800s. And she was a farmer's wife. She came into the Salt Lake Valley and settled and raised a family and was a worker on the farm and actually started a printing press in the Salt Lake Valley called Carr Printing, one of the first in the valley. And I just, during that time, for a woman to be doing something so magnificent as starting a company, like, it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, like a woman at that time doing a man's job.
Yeah.
Yeah, wow. Okay, so, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is. Joe, where can people contact you when you aren't advancing your career by your association with Ewan?
Interesting. His career is way far in advance of mine because, like, I'm quite happy just being an unpromoted classroom teacher, just staying at the bottom of the rung with no responsibility. So when I'm not doing that, you can find me on the Babel Conference. You can tweet me on the Twitter at joeyjoe77uk, or you can email me, joepodcasts@gmail.com. And Amy, where can people contact you when you're not attempting to sever a warp nacelle with a phaser rifle?
Nice. When I'm not attempting to do that, I will, of course, be boosting the output, of course. You can contact me on Twitter, at Miss Amy Nelson. I'm also on United Federation of Podcast Network, where I am hosting All Good Things, and I am right there in the Babel Conference. If you'd like to help us keep all our shows coming to you each week, you can become a patron of the network on Patreon. Visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm to get all the details. It requires a great deal of money to produce, host, and distribute these shows each month. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm.
We'd like to take this opportunity to recognize our current associate producers, Norman Lau, Michael Huter, Thomas Appel, Chris Tribuzio, Jim McMahon, Justin Ozer, and me, Joe Keegan. Thank you for supporting Trek FM and especially Earl Grey.
So join us next time for another cup of Earl Grey.
Great joy and happiness.
Great joy and gratitude. Joe!
What? Did I partially steal your quote?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought it'd be funny.
I thought you were going to do something that Crusher said.
Oh, did he say anything? Oh, really?
Annie Carr.
I'm going to Google Annie Carr. Have you? Is there a picture of Annie Carr?
Oh, I'm sure.
Oh, that'd be amazing if it was like your double.
No, it's not.
How do you spell Carr? Is it double R?
C-A-R-R.
Yeah. Printing press.
Carr printing is what it's, and it's still around right now. Yeah.
I'm going to Google that. Thank you. It's interesting. So, sorry, Amy, yeah. It's interesting when you say pioneer. Yeah. Because obviously you've got a vision of the pioneers from like old movies and I don't know what the
covered wagons. Oxen.
That's the image that comes to mind right away, like Little House on the Prairie.
That is the truth.
Mm-hmm.
But also
Appalachian Spring by Erin Copeland. Piece of music, listen to it. Erin Copeland, Appalachian Spring. There, it makes me think about being a bald eagle, I know, flying over the prairies and through the mountains, and now there's glacial lakes in the mountains. I've this got this really idealized idea about the United States from childhood and from pictures. So people, Americans will be listening going, what's that guy talking about? He's just nuts. America is not like that. But yeah, it's in my mind. So listen to that piece of music. It's quite magnificent.